Thank you all for being here today. How was the flight in? It's gorgeous.
Oh, it was great.
Perfect.
Great flight.
Well, you picked a good weekend to be here. And what brings you to Ketchikan?
The flight. No, I'm kidding. The great weather. Now, we're just coming down to touch base. We try and get to as many communities as possible. We've been up to Fairbanks, obviously Anchorage, Mat-Su, Kenai. We'll be here in Southeast, go back to Juneau, be back down next week. So it's a big state. You got to be all over the state and see what's going on.
Exactly. And how many times have you been here since governor? Is this a handful?
It's probably I think we've been here at least once a year. Yeah, once a year. We just met a couple minutes ago with folks from Metlakatla, elected officials, as well as Saxman. And we're looking forward to talking with a whole host of folks. We also met with the city and the borough.
Awesome. Well, it's a good day to do it, and we'll just jump right in. Kind of the first question on the list I have here is, so obviously oil prices are pretty high. Is the state saving enough for the future, given the large PFDs and capital projects in this year's budget?
The question is the state saving enough for the future? Well, we don't know what the future holds, so we're going to try and save as much money as possible, but also take care of immediate needs and do a little investing in some of our capital projects as well. So I think it's going to be a little bit of three things: savings, capital, and making sure we take care of our operating costs.
Absolutely. And when you say immediate needs, what are some of the things that spring to mind?
Well, your operating costs. I mean, you have to make sure that you're funding schools and you're taking care of your road issues and your public safety issues. So as mentioned, Doug Vincent Lang, our Department of Fish and Game Commissioner is here. We have to take care of the operating costs for our departments to make sure they're running. And so those are your immediate needs. And then your future needs, obviously, are your capital that we invest now in. And then we hope to get a return on it, whether it's roads, bridges, ports, harbors, et cetera. And then you save for the future for those things you can't foresee and most likely, changes in oil prices.
Absolutely. And kind of shifting gears on you, but obviously the special election for Don Young's seat is ongoing. I was curious what you make of a report that more ballots have been rejected or thrown out during this one, especially in rural Alaska.
I have not heard that. And that's the first time I heard that, but certainly I would have to believe that the Division of Elections is all over this since they're the ones that run the elections. But I'll check in. That's a very good question.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of related, and thought I would throw it in, what level of confidence do you have in the Dominion voting systems that we have here in the state?
The Dominion voting systems that we have, they're not voting machines. That's number one. So you don't use them to vote. And what they have are tabulators, which tabulate the paper ballots, and they're not connected to the internet. So they're standalone machines that just tabulate your paper ballot. It's different than other states.
Gotcha. And I'm just going to move us sort of away from elections for a moment. So the year has been pretty big for discussions on, obviously, Roe v. Wade. What outcome do you hope to see on that issue from the Supreme Court as it kind of moves forward?
Alaska is in a different position than most other states. Alaska was one of four states, I believe, in 1970 that lifted restrictions on abortion. And Alaska, if Alaska was to make any changes, they would have to be constitutional changes at the state level. So if Roe v. Wade were to go away, it wouldn't make much of a difference in Alaska.
Gotcha. And I understand there's a lot of conversation around a constitutional convention. What's your personal take on that?
I have a lot of faith in the people of Alaska. And if the people of Alaska choose to have a constitutional convention, I have faith that whatever items they wish to work on, the outcomes will be in line with what the people expect and want. But I don't know how the vote's going to go. I don't know if folks are going to vote for a constitutional amendment or not. And that's all on the ballot is, do you want to have a constitutional convention? So I'm not sure how it'll go. We'll see. But again, if they vote for it, I think I think the people of Alaska, once again, I have a lot of faith in them that there will be some positive outcomes. If they decide they don't want it, then I'd have to accept that they're content with the constitutional arrangement we have now.
Gotcha. And if they did vote to have a constitutional convention, what are some things that you expect to see from that people might have an interest in discussion?
Oh, I think there'd be a lot of things. I mean, because we haven't revisited the Constitution in totality since 1959.
Yeah, and big question.
Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of things that they would want to look at. I mean, everything from land ownership to the way the courts are selected. I mean, and everything in between. So I would imagine everything would be examined.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a big question and a lot going on there. And I'm going to kind of move again to a different topic. But here in Ketchikan, obviously, we have the Ketchikan Indian community. And I understand that they, as well as some other groups in Alaska, aren't recognized as a sovereign nation, but might want to be. What are you kind of feeling about that? Is that a possibility? And if so?
Well, I mean, we know the feds recognize the sovereignty of the tribes, and the state has relationships with our tribes. You know, the only reservation concept is Metlakatla in the state of Alaska. And so, the state, we deal with tribes all the time, at the tribal government all the time. We have compacts with the tribal governments. My wife is a tribal member. My three daughters are tribal members. So the state has a relationship with tribes.
Gotcha. And just to pick your brain for a minute, is there a particular reason that they aren't recognized as sovereign nations, like on the federal level?
Because the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which settled the claims back in the 70s, separated the components into an INCSA corporation model, and there is still a tribal model, but the tribes, for the most part, except for Metlakatla, don't have the land in their possession. That's in the possession of the corporation. So that was a model that is unique to Alaska. It's different than other states. But again, that was something that was voted on as a bill in Congress and passed back in the early 70s.
Gotcha. And in a similar vein, what do you think are some of the biggest or most important issues that are facing Native communities here in the state at this time?
I think it's similar issues that are facing everybody. What are the opportunities for our kids? Are they going to get a great education? What's the future look like? What are the economic opportunities? We all wrestle with drug and alcohol and substance abuse, public safety. So again, in my house, I have four women, my wife and three daughters, who are tribal members. They're ANCSA members as well. The three girls work at a remote mine up in Red Dog, north of Kotzebue. And so their issues are similar to issues not just here in the state, but issues for everybody across the country.
Absolutely. And I know that there's been a couple of announcements about task forces dedicated to missing and murdered Indigenous women. Are there any updates there, or...
I don't have any updates with me because I wasn't prepared right now to talk to that. I don't know if Randy wants to hop in.
Sure. Thank you, Governor. So that is a very important topic for the Governor and Commissioner Cockrell at Public Safety. We've just recently hired Ann Sears, who's a Alaska Native career trooper retired out of Nome, to specifically work on missing and murdered Indigenous people. And she's got a real sense for it, given her background, and we'll probably be adding to those efforts. But she's got the start of it underway and is making progress already.
You know, we've really focused on public safety in this administration. For example, the backlog in rape test kits that we had for many, many years has been taken care of. We're collecting, and we're in pretty good shape on DNA for those individuals that the state has arrested and has processed. We're making some inroads on cold case issues that some of them date back for decades, in terms of using new technology with regard to DNA and tracking folks who have committed crimes. And we've moved a number of bills that will help with trafficking and making sure that our most vulnerable are protected. So again, and we're beefing up our police and our prosecuting attorney cadre. So we're determined to make sure this is a safe state for all Alaskans, especially our most vulnerable, our kids and our women. And we're gonna keep working this issue as long as I'm governor.
Yeah, thank you for explaining some of that. And so obviously you're here in Southeast on a beautiful summer day.
It's like this every day of the year, I hear.
Every single day, never any different. So ferries are obviously huge here. And I know we have added that one trip to Prince Rupert, and a lot of people are excited about that. Do you see any expansion on that particular route?
Well, I'm gonna have Randy talk about the things that we've actually done for the ferry system here.
Yeah, thank you, Governor. The Prince Rupert route is being restarted. It's I think the first revenue trip is the 20th of this month, so coming right up. And the idea is to continue to expand our terminal facilities down there. We need some terminal improvements to comply with federal laws. But we're working with the Canadian government as well on that. And then once we can crew up the remaining boat that's here in the dock, the Columbia, which Captain Falvey's working very hard to do, there's a national shortage of rated mariners that we're bumping up against. But when that boat comes online, that will really open up the opportunity for increased service to Prince Rupert. But that is in the plan.
Fantastic. And as far as the marine highway system overall, what do you see in terms of maintenance or expansion? Any big hurdles or objectives here?
No, we actually are. We're putting a lot of resources into making sure that we have boats that are up to speed and running. As Randy mentioned, we're putting resources in to make sure that we get the crews. Randy can talk for a moment about the ferry seats that are up this year. And the savings account that we're looking at for the ferry system as well.
Sure. So we've got underway a goal to stabilize the entire system and build up some reserve savings, as well as work on the capital side and operating maintenance. So a lot of this is driven by the governor's task force report on the marine highway system. They made a number of recommendations that we've implemented, including extending the ferry season by 6 months. So they're running on a calendar year now, which lets them get their schedules out earlier and generate more revenue, more certainty in scheduling. And then we've put money into the capital side. The Hubbard's in the Ketchikan shipyard now, getting crew quarters placed on it so that boat can be much more versatile throughout the fleet. And then the Tustamina replacement vessel, effort to get that boat, a new boat built for that, is underway. So major investments on both the capital and maintenance side and stabilize the fleet. And, you know, we're really, the biggest issue right now is the recruiting, which is a nationwide shortage of rated mariners. And, you know, we've got bonuses in place for hiring. We've got headhunter, recruiter looking, helping us find them. But once we get past that, and we're having some success, once we get past that, we'll be in really good shape.
Awesome. And not to keep you on the hot seat, but is there a timeline for those crew quarters on the Hubbard, just out of curiosity?
The boat's in the shipyard now. It's being worked on now, and it'll be, I think the schedule for completion is October.
Very nice. And so moving on to sort of a boat-related topic, I understand the Bycatch Review Task Force. How is that going?
Well, we have our Commissioner of Fish and Game sitting right next to us. So,
awesome.
Doug, do you want to?
Yeah, so the governor is concerned about, he's been hearing the noises about bycatch out in the Bering Sea as well as in the Gulf of Alaska. So he's created a task force to look at ways to reduce the impact of bycatch on many of our coastal fisheries. That task force is up and running. It's created four different work groups, one on Western Alaskan salmon, and that has native representation from the affected rivers in the Kuskokwim and Yukon River drainages. We have a crab group that's looking at crab across the Bering and Gulf of Alaska, and a Gulf of Alaska salmon and halibut task force. And finally, we have a technology and science task force. We know we need to look at science and technology as a way to further reduce bycatch and reduce its impacts. We're looking at trying to get the report done by sometime in November and hopefully feed into the North Pacific Fishery Management Council's recent motion that they took to develop a discussion paper that they would look at bycatch, since most of the bycatch occurs in federal waters.
Nice. Yeah, thank you for that. And at this point, preliminarily, is there any anticipated policy changes or effects?
Well, we're looking at them because right now we're first trying to determine the magnitude of the impact bycatch is having on many of those coastal fisheries. And then from there, we'll be able to come up with recommendations as to whether caps are appropriate mechanisms or whether voluntary working group mechanisms working with the fleet is the best way to go.
What's the timeline we talked about on the task force coming up with some recommendations? Sometime fall.
Yeah, I think November is when we're looking at it and hopefully feed into the council discussion on this in the December meeting.
Yeah, and then that way in the winter we can prepare for any policy changes at the state level going into next year.
And this year we're taking steps with the pollock industry, trawl industry in the Bering Sea, and we have a voluntary program set up which we hope is going to have a significant reduction in bycatch of chum salmon, which is a major factor in the Bering Sea driving a lot of these discussions.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know I was hearing from some folks earlier that, you know, there is concern about salmon and just having enough and, you know, managing the population even here in Southeast. Is there anything to add in that regard?
Well, salmon production is down across the state, especially chum and king salmon. We're looking at the reasons for that. The governor has approved some money to go come to Fish and Game to start doing some marine research. We don't think it's a freshwater issue. We think it's all related to what's happening in that early life stages when these salmon emigrate from their rivers into the ocean. So we actually have two new studies that we're going to put underway in both the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska to look at that nearshore survival and the factors driving it.
Great, fantastic, and definitely a little bit of a shift, but I understand that the state's kind of emergency status, using that as an umbrella term, is coming to an end here shortly. Thank you, Eric. Is coming to an end here shortly. What do you think Alaskans should take from that? What's the messaging behind that move?
You're referring to the fact that the disaster that we were under went away quite some time ago, but that the emergency status, that was mainly for some governmental programs such as SNAP and the ability for some of the medical approaches that we were dealing with in the pandemic to get some funding as well. Department of Health and Social Services under Adam Crum, Dr. Zink, and others have determined that we don't need to be under that emergency declaration anymore to keep addressing the issues involving COVID. So it's time to move on. And from their perspective, and I concur, that we don't need to be under that emergency declaration to be able to address any of the health needs related to the COVID virus.
Absolutely. It's been a while of dealing with this. Kind of a really broad question, but what do you think was one of the most important things that your administration messaged about the pandemic? And
That it was real, and that there are measures that individuals can take to protect themselves. That when the vaccinations came on the scene, that we made them available for folks that wanted to take the vaccination. And we knew that we had to make sure that certain systems weren't overwhelmed if there were a large number of folks that had to go to the hospitals. And so we focused on our hospitals, and we brought up close to 450 temporary workers to get through a couple stages of that virus to make sure that our hospital systems would not collapse. And we succeeded in all of these areas.
Absolutely. And I just want to circle back around to an earlier question. So HB 123, do you plan to sign that? It would provide that state recognition of those tribes?
We're in the process of making a decision, and we'll have that answer next week because we're going to finalize a number of things that came out of the legislature, including the budgets here next week.
Gotcha. And so do the budgets factor into that decision then?
No, but it's coming on my desk as a package from the legislative action. So we'll be looking at the budgets, we'll be looking at bills, a whole host of bills, and deciding which bills get signed, which bills are just allowed to become law, and if there are some bills that need to be vetoed. So next week we'll be able to have that decision.
Great. And I don't want to keep you for too long, but just kind of one last broad question. So reflecting back on this term as governor here, what would you point to as maybe one of your most meaningful accomplishments or something that you campaigned on and you feel has been accomplished?
Public safety is a big one. Working as hard as we could to get a PFD for the people of Alaska that was as close as possible to be in line with the statutory formula. And doing our work and advancing a gas line.
Gotcha. And do you feel there are any things that are still ongoing or left undone?
Lots. Always. It's an ongoing process. So we're going to continue to work, for example, in improving the reading performance for our kids in schools. We passed the reading bill this year. We're going to start to look at a similar situation for math and making sure that math is on the radar screen for schools as well. But there's just a whole host of things. We had a land bill that was a comprehensive land reform bill that would have put land in the hands of farmers, would have changed some regulations on farming. It would also would have gotten land in the hands of our Alaska Native veterans who unfortunately couldn't get land when they were serving in the during the Vietnam War. So there's a whole host of things we're going to work on.
Gotcha. All right. Is there anything that anybody wants to add or you feel listeners should know?
Randy? I'll add just a quick note on the Marine Highway System. One of the most important bills for the system that passed is a bill that will create a permanent endowment fund for the ferry system. And the way the plan is set up right now, the annual fares from running the ferry system should be able to roll over into that fund and stay there as a savings account. So that'll provide a really good cushion savings account for future use of the ferry system.
Yeah, and I'll just add, just very briefly, crime rates are down significantly from a few years ago. The ferry system is in probably as good a shape as it's been in years. We've got a record PFD that's going to be going out to people, and we believe that Alaska's best years are ahead of us. We've got a lot of things going for us here in the state of Alaska, and so our savings accounts, we're saving money as a result of the high oil prices, and we have a balanced budget and savings and a high PFD.
So building on that, how would you describe Alaska's financial situations at this particular juncture, understanding it is changing and you can't predict the future?
Right. Right now, it's in pretty good shape because, again, we came in under a $1.6 billion deficit. We'll be putting a considerable amount of money in savings, funding a number of programs, including capital projects, and addressing some of the backlog needs that we've had that we discussed here in the interview. But I think we're in pretty good shape right now.
Great. Awesome. And if you have one more minute for me, something just came to mind, the split of the DHSS. Where are we at on that?
We're working through the split, dividing the department out as we discuss with the legislature. And we're in the process of choosing a commissioner for the social side of things, as well as the health side of things. And so we'll probably have more information on that, I think, in a few weeks.
That's correct, Governor. The budgets for that new department agency will go into effect July 1.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you all for your time. Last call for anything to add. It's always good to ask.
I'll add something. You know, one thing I want to add is we had a pandemic, and I want to really express my thanks to all the public that worked with us to make sure that Alaskans could perform their jobs, get out and do their fishing, get out and do their lives. You know, the pandemic really did have a lot of effect on society, but Alaska really worked together to work our way through that to maintain our economy moving forward. And I think we're in a really good position to move forward from this point on.
And I just want to say it's great to be in Ketchikan. This was the first city I came to in 1983 when I came to Alaska. It was a fantastic city then. It's a fantastic city now. And I don't think the weather's like this every day, but we're going to enjoy what we got. So
yeah, that might have been a little bit of a stretch of the truth on my part. But we like it here. And thank you guys for making time for us.
Absolutely. Thank you.